Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 56 for June 4th, 2006. Bork, bork, bork. This is episode 56 of This Week in Tech. Joining us, a good mix of people. I think we're going to have a good time tonight. Of course, John C. Dvorak, as always, is here.
Dvorak.org/blog.
First words out of his mouth, the last words out of his mouth. The first and last word in blocking. Also, from Long Beach Island, New Jersey. There's only one person that can be. It's John. Patrick Norton, my good friend, my good buddy. Are you on vacation?
A little bit of tweak of vacation before work in New York on Monday and Tuesday.
Oh, what are you going to do in New York?
They got a premiere for the Digital Life show and then doing some meetings at the mothership for Ziff Davis.
Ziff Davis. They're not in One Dark anymore, are they?
No. They left that place not too long after I moved out to California.
What a nightmare building that was. Their old One Park Avenue.
It was
Avenue.
A charming building.
Awful. Also here, somebody who's never been on TWiT before from Grape Radio, one of the pioneer podcasters, Michael Gohagan. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Michael does Disney's podcasts too and has made a business out of podcasting, which is kind of neat.
We try.
What's the name of your company?
Wilnick Productions.
Wilnick. Are you Will or Nick?
My sons. I have William and Nicholas.
Oh, that's cute. Also, Doug Kay, who doesn't have a microphone, so he's just going to have to shout from IT Conversations. Another pioneer celebrating your third anniversary.
That's right. We came up here to Petaluma just to celebrate. ITConversations.com.
Woohoo! Learning from Dvorak. 3 years. Now, podcasting is not even 2 years old. So
that's correct.
That's saying quite a bit.
Well, we try and claim that we are the oldest still running podcast. Now, that ignores the fact that people like you were doing audio way before podcasting. But
yeah, but who would take pride of place older than you? That came out
all right.
What podcast is older than, I mean, was there something that isn't running anymore that is actually older?
Well, Chris Lydon did the first podcast, I think, which was an MP3 attached to an RSS feed.
That makes it a podcast.
Right, but that show's gone. So we get.
What
we
was
get
the name of that show?
Chris Lydon.
Okay. Good name.
So, I don't know.
It was the eponymous Chris Lydon.
Well, he was fired from from a public radio station back east, and he did his own shows.
That's right.
Did some interviews, great interviews.
That's right.
And then so that became the first podcast.
We should get him on. Whatever happened
to
him?
He's great. Oh, I saw him about 2 months ago back in Boston. He's doing a show called Open Source. It's on public radio and podcast as well. Very good show.
Good. Open Source is not a good name for a radio show.
No,
we thought about
confuses
that
everything.
Yeah. And also here from CNET and Buzz Out Loud, we're always glad to have Molly Wood join us. Hey, Molly.
Hello. Buzz.cnet.com. Is everyone doing that?
Buzz.cnet.com. I went to the CNET reviews page, and you have the world's most massive laptop in front of you. What the hell was that? That thing is huge.
It's kind of a concept laptop from Dell, the XPS M2010.
Looks like the Andre the Giant of laptops.
It's so strange.
Unbelievable. And it weighs almost 20 pounds. Like, it actually, I mean, it was hard for me to carry.
Great. We're going back to the days of the Compaq and the sewing machine. What's the point?
It's more of a lifestyle machine than a true notebook.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's a desktop with a 20-inch, monitor you can sort of strap onto it and take to the beach for the weekend or something.
if that's a laptop, I want to see the lap.
You know, it's interesting, though. It has a detachable kind of Bluetooth keyboard and a bunch of, like, a remote control that actually lets you control the cursor from across the room. I can see it actually working pretty well as a computer plus television plus stereo in, like, a dorm room.
Oh, maybe that's the market.
Except it's $3,500, so that's clearly not the market. So
is it for sale, or is it pure,
ignore my theory?
Is it pure concept, or is it actually for sale?
I think it is for sale. I assume it's only concept in the sense that they're going to see if anyone would actually buy it.
Wow. Well,
at $3,500, I'm thinking.
I think they're going to be
likely
making one or two.
You know, I think. Yeah. disturbing how often products like that sell in ridiculous amounts.
I think the problem is it just doesn't, maybe it was the way you were demonstrating it, Molly, but it just didn't look, it looked ungainly.
It is incredibly ungainly. It's like a suitcase. I mean, when I walked around with it, I felt like I was selling encyclopedias.
It's a loser. It's not going to sell 10 copies.
Yeah, right. It's a dud.
And there goes the Dell advertising campaign we were hoping to launch next week. Actually, they won't get back to us, so I don't care.
Hey, you know, on the other hand, Dell's got some nice little guys that are lightweight and they're pretty cool.
So too late, John. Don't try to save it. No, but we never let it.
You know, people have tried these big clunkers. I mean, even Sun Microsystems made one of them. They suck.
It's a bad idea. I don't even understand the motivation to do it, frankly.
I think
because
too big or too small.
Because you guys have never done sales.
You would do this and say, oh, yeah. So you would arrive at the clients with this massive laptop. And you'd unfold it.
I mean, do you have any idea how many vendor meetings I've been to where the vendors are traveling around with a full-size desktop machine
really?
And a monitor? Still today, even.
Oh, wow. All right.
It's so much easier to bring one of those lightweight projectors.
Those are cool, too.
Except if you don't have a dark room or you know, to dark enough room and a you know empty wall to point it at, John.
So we took a week off for Memorial Day weekend, which means we really have 2 weeks worth of news we can do. I don't know if we care about going back to the good old days. Why don't we start with the most recent story? It's one that Patrick brought up, and you're going to have to fill me in because I don't know much about it. You were talking about a meeting with the ISPs. What was the story? I don't remember.
Molly.
Was it Molly?
A pretty good line. This was CNET actually broke the story. CNET and the USA Today a week ago The attorney general, the guy that runs the FBI, sat down with a bunch of ISPs, including, I believe, basically reps from everybody from Microsoft and Comcast.
AOL, Verizon.
And said, we wanted you to do us a favor. We want you to hold all the records for everybody. We want you to hold all of the records for everybody's downloading and search habits for 2 years.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. And then on Friday, you know, the day before yesterday, Friday, they were supposed to sit down and sort of start hammering out the details about what they wanted retained. And the undertone was, the reports were really interesting to read because the undertone was that they wanted the ISPs to voluntarily do this or they would hammer through legislation to make it law because they want this. They want this information subpoenable. Is that a word, John? Subpoenable.
It should be. It rolls off the tongue. I like it.
It feels so smooth.
Subpoenalicious.
Subpoenalicious.
You go to a subpoena colony for that.
And in Canada, they won't let you register that as a domain name if it upsets anyone. But the
subpoenable.
No, there's a whole. Fura about anyhow it's a political thing. Somebody managed to use their political pull to get a site, the DNS information, registrar information for a website that was critical of their candidates.
Alberto Gonzalez, our esteemed attorney general, seems to be really kind of backward on privacy rights, I have to say.
Well, if he's not looking at it. It was from what the and you know, jump in at any time, Molly. But apparently, mm-hmm. from what some of the people responding who were at the meeting said is like Gonzalez starts the meeting and immediately throws up a bunch of pictures of child pornography on the screen.
This isn't about child porn. They want to see who's going to vote for Bush.
I understand that, John. But it's like the next thing they do is they're talking about how it's all about. You know, tracking potential terrorists or being able to pursue terrorists. And then at the tail end of the meeting, it's like, well, we'd also, you know, we'd definitely be using this for intellectual property cases.
That's who's pushing it. It has nothing to do with terrorists. It's Hollywood.
Yeah. And the general consensus, it would be like whatever they wanted to use it for to gather evidence for federal, you know, and
I love it how they
– It's pretty disturbing. You go ahead.
They pull up, you know, the most sensational – pictures they can. Terrorists, child pornographers. And that's what they always do when they want to reduce human rights or civil rights. They say,
and they've been absolutely hammering on this terrorism argument that, you know, we have to use this to catch terrorists and we have to use this to catch child pornographers. And the feeling in Washington, from what I've heard from various sort of internet lobbyists, is that they've got a lot of tools at their disposal that they're currently not using. There are a lot of child porn laws that aren't currently being enforced.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they know that they don't have the congressional mandate to require ISPs and telcos to keep this data. But I can't imagine how unnerving it would be as one of these companies to be in the position of saying, like, okay, obviously we don't want to do this, but what's going to be the retaliation? What's going to be the result if we don't?
It was 16.
Microsoft had a pretty good comment actually in response. They sort of said, "We really respect what you're saying, And we're not going to do that.
Good.
So it, at this point, it's just sort of like, well, who's going to do it first?
But wasn't it about 15 shows ago that we had Dane Jasper, the CEO of Sonic.net, the small ISP up here, who said that they've been trying to get, you know, Carnivore and these other boxes in ISPs for ages. What's new about this? Is this new? I mean, retaining information, how is that different from them looking at everything, don't you think?
Well, it's very different because they're putting the burden of storing, like, let's say, if you're talking about 2 years of the search and IP requests for every user, you're talking about a pretty insane, archival issue, right?
Well, it's different from the point of view of the ISPs, but from a privacy point of view, if the ISP stores it or the FBI stores it, it doesn't really much matter.
And it wasn't just data retention. I mean, it would be literally search terms. It would be emails, not necessarily, they say, the content of emails, but who those emails were sent to and when and how often, possibly instant messaging correspondence, like ISPs turning over your buddy lists, essentially. I mean, it is an extreme amount of data, way beyond kind of what they already can look at.
And they were saying they would have to file a subpoena to get this information, but they just wanted the ISPs to sit on it. And the idea of having this sitting around in an ISP, I think, creeps me out more.
Yeah. Or they would just institute a wiretapping program and get it without a subpoena. That's the unnerving part, right? Like,
In this case, they'd actually have to break into the ISP to do the wiretapping,
or they could get the ISP to pull an AT&T and funnel it directly to them.
That's well
without a subpoena.
But most of the ISPs have been pretty amenable to that in the past.
They can get the data.
Say the search engines.
It's not going to be a problem to get the data. What I think is being overlooked in this argument, which I actually mentioned in a MarketWatch column some weeks ago, is that the ability to use this kind of information with some data mining tools to figure out mergers and acquisitions before they happen so you can make a killing in the stock market is I think, the real goal of this deal.
Wait a minute.
Trying to find people who are going to vote against you.
You think Alberto Gonzalez is looking for market tips?
No, this is how Google made all its money.
Now that's a conspiracy theory. I'm liking this.
That's a 90-degree turn from where we were headed, I think, at least.
They just want to make some money. AGs just want to have fun.
Well, I guess it's sort of they clearly want to do something that is most likely untoward.
And don't forget, you can also, this is a great way to identify your political enemies. I mean,
that's always the threat.
We might as well just all move to Venezuela.
Well, maybe I'm just getting paranoid, but I have to say, I just feel the grip tightening every day further and further from this administration. And I have to say, the more we talk about it, the more I feel like we're going to get a knock on the door or we're going to get audited or. Hello? Hello?
Run, Leo, run!
Get out! Save yourself!
It's just scary. Here's another story that's related, I guess, in a way. You know, the Pirate Bay in Sweden, which is kind of historically the most rude of all the BitTorrent tracker sites. Whenever they get a cease and desist or a DMCA request, they just post it online and mock it. Were raided, Swedish police. And I just, for some reason, see these guys from the Muppet Show going, give us your server. They came in, they shut the place down. Some say...
All the Swedes out there, send your email to Leo.
I already got an email on this one. We have a lot of Swedish listeners. And I know that this is inappropriate, but it's just, I can't help it. I just see the Muppets. In any event, which is, I'm sure that the Swedish police are just as mean and nasty as police anywhere, but they seem
fuzzy.
Many
police are very helpful, Leo, trying to do good things.
Hey, I wouldn't want to live in a world without police.
And they went and they yanked all the servers and inadvertently yanked the servers running some other web pages in the process.
Well, and then the irony is that Pirate Bay is back up.
Back up.
Offshore.
Yeah.
Didn't take too long.
And they said they would be up within days.
And they were.
Yeah. And they continue to claim that they're doing nothing illegal under Swedish law.
Doesn't take much to move a server.
Well, that's the point.
The interesting thing is that under Swedish law, even if they are found to be violating copyright, I mean, it sounds like the Swedish police seized about 200 servers, only two or three of which were actually running the Pirate Bay site. And even if they are found to be violating copyright under Swedish law, that's punishable by a fine. So there's sort of a big question about what prompted this massive sort of SWAT team style raid.
Well, there's a lot of contention that the U.S. government put Hollywood and the recording industry put pressure on the U.S. government. The U.S. government makes a call to the Swedish government. The Swedish government calls the Swedish police and goes,
All right. That's how it happens.
Leo at leoville.com. Thank you very much.
So I guess I'm looking at their site. Now, I liked it, the picture of the ship shooting big cannonballs at the Hollywood logo.
These guys really have always won my vote for just ballsiness, you know?
They have an entire anti-piracy bureau.
1 million registered users. Holy mackerel.
Well, yeah. What do you mean an anti-piracy bureau? What does that mean?
I don't know. It's got a bunch of letters in it with those weird symbols above it. I have no idea. Anti-pirate Byron. Swedish anti-piracy bureau.
If you really want to have fun, click on the bottom of there where it says legal threats.
Those are so rude.
Great. Just, you know, the email from DreamWorks, for instance, and then our response. Oh, these are 404.
Like Microsoft email. We get tons of these.
They're so bold.
You know what? These are all 404-ing, so I have a feeling they haven't got all the servers up. But this is the best, frankly, the best part, if you ask me. And they'll say things like, you must mistake us for somebody who lives in America, or your lawyers must be, taking your money because it's not illegal. But I get
for listeners out there, the URL is thepiratebay.org, and that's all one word without a www. At least I don't. Maybe there's www too, but it's thepiratebay.org if you want to have fun.
The graph at the bottom of the legal threats page is always so much fun, and it's like nice graphs for the law firms that don't get the hint above. Threats rising, torrents deleted, remains at zero.
Zero. Although maybe they can't say that anymore. I don't know. They say we've never carried any pirate files. We just have torrent, torrent meta files.
That's also like saying I don't traffic in stolen goods. I just tell you where to buy them.
They aid and abet.
You know, and then you get into the whole international law versus American law versus what's, you know, how does copyright get applied? Well,
and I have to admit, these guys really are promoting piracy. They make no bones about that.
Oh, yeah, look at the stuff they got. I hate to say it, but I've actually never been on this site until now. Well, they got a lot of stuff here.
Thank you, RIA. Corey Sherman has helped us find new sources.
Well, it's considered to be like the premier,
it's the one.
Public.
And it's the one that never went down. You know, when Loki Torrent went down with the MPAA threats, all of the trackers in the U.S. went down, the Pirate Bay stayed open. And frankly, I always thought, these guys are the champions of free piracy everywhere.
Well, it's interesting that they're also almost like a sort of, they're the forefront of a political movement too. There's a pirate party.
That's what
in
I
Sweden
like.
Saying essentially we need to reform intellectual property law. And it is quite, there is still that outstanding question of can we in the U.S. export our intellectual property demands? Our sort of particularly draconian set of laws, at least right now.
I want to say something in defense of these guys. I'm looking at some of the offerings or some of the links that they have to the various BitTorrents, and in the case of course, being a ridiculous nerd, I go to audiobooks. But they get like the number two is learn French, and the number two, like number 10 or 11 is learn Spanish, learn Italian, learn German, learn Russian. This is a benefit to a society.
It's educational.
Yeah. Good. So, John, we're going to take everything you've written, and later on we're going to take everything out of your house, and we're going to give it to all the needy people in the East Bay because it's a benefit to society.
All right.
And of course, if you go to movies, you see that the first movie is X-Men The Last Stand. The second one's The Da Vinci Code. The third one's Mission Impossible 3.
These are all in the theaters.
Yeah, I challenge anybody to try to download these. They'll never come over.
Well, even if you get it.
John,
now, are you
they
not
will all
go
come
see,
over.
Are you
every
not
single...
How would you know, Patrick?
I have friends in law enforcement that assure me that they work.
Oh, so the cops are, Patrick, the way I see it,
it works. BitTorrent works.
And people wonder why BitTorrent gets a bad rap.
I mean, this is law enforcement. That's a good one.
He does. He has
friends
all over.
Well, I'm sure he does. Who doesn't?
Hey, Patrick, I was in Indianapolis over the weekend, and the chief of police said to say hi.
Thanks, man.
But this really is BitTorrent's biggest problem because the technology is obviously lumped in with the use of the technology, and it can't really make progress as long as this is going on.
I love that the Motion Picture Association, on the one hand, is shutting these trackers down, on the other hand, is giving Bram Cohen money and basically co-opting BitTorrent for their own purposes. So
but
they recognize the value of it.
We would all like to see BitTorrent built into our clients.
You bet.
And how's that going to happen as long as this kind of stuff is going on?
There are actually a number of companies that have already, like IM.com has BitTorrent downloads built into their video client, and a number of other, there's a couple of video companies that are using it for distribution. But and it's also being developed for a really interesting thing on some of the cell phone companies are playing around with using a version of it to distribute their downloads.
But Michael Gohagan, wouldn't you like to have iTunes support appear, some sort of peer-to-peer? I mean, how much what's your bandwidth, Bill?
Well, I've got the same deal you do through AOL.
You don't have to worry.
But, you know, for some of the other stuff we do, it's a problem. We hide the files in different places. Right. And, you know, some of the clients actually have it built in, but obviously the main player, iTunes, it should be in there.
How about you, Doug? I know you actually were starting to face a real bandwidth crisis with IT Conversations.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing okay right now, but, I mean, ultimately,
you do like 100 podcasts a week, though. I mean, you're kind of crazy.
Yeah, but we have Limelight who helped us out.
Limelight's still helping out.
We have a partner, yeah. But as we're expanding, we're going to be up against the same problem.
It would be so much better if you had BitTorrent built into a major client like iTunes.
Yeah, the biggest problem is that, of course, Apple's got such close relationships with the intellectual property people. I don't think they could ever do it.
No.
Because that just would be a problem.
You'd kill them.
Am I making this up, or are we supposed to be getting BitTorrent in Firefox? Patrick, do you know?
I've heard that.
I've heard it, but I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen sort of official confirmation, but I've heard it.
All right. Well, maybe that's just one of my dreams. I woke up saying, I just feel like it's going to be
telling you, this pirate thing, I'm fascinated by it.
John's enjoying the pirate bay.
They got
Don't
sound
bother.
Clips on here. Remember the old sound effects we used to use, Leo, on the old radio show?
I still have them. I haven't gotten rid of them. If you want, I'll send you the disc, and you can, once again, make merry.
I am going to try to minimize that. Although there's the time in Bukava, Belgian Congo, still.
I have it. I can drop it in any time. In fact, I think I did on some of the very earliest twits. I think I might have thrown that in.
Mm. Opera, getting back to the browser discussion, Opera does have BitTorrent.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And who uses Opera?
The Swedish. Swedish police.
It all comes back.
Firefox get angry because we don't mention Opera, because everything Firefox does, they claim Opera
does better.
There you go.
Yeah, Firefox is open source and Opera is not.
Yeah, the other thing, Opera has a problem. We can't really figure out how many people actually use Opera because it goes stealth. You know, it says that it's not Opera. It says it's Microsoft Internet Explorer with most users.
Well, and for people who complain that we don't talk about Opera, we had the president of Opera on Twit, so whatever his name is.
We're talking about it now.
Jorma Kekkonen or whatever his name was.
I got it when they were giving it away for free. That was it. Other than that.
It is free now.
Oh, is it?
It's back to free.
Back to free.
Yeah. And still good. And, you know, if you use a phone, it's probably still the best browser for a small device.
Actually, a lot of CSS experts say it's really the best browser of the three.
They invented the ACID test, which makes it a little unfair, but they and Safari are the only two browsers, to my knowledge, that pass it.
Is that another Jorma Kekkonen reference? ACID test
and Jorma
Kekkonen.
Kekkorian, whatever his name is. Hot tuna, right?
Oh, no. Have you guys heard about all of MP3 developments?
What's happening with all of MP3? They're much like the Pirate Bay. They've been squeaking through on a loophole in Russian law, offering what they claim to be legal downloads of major music for pennies song. Right.
What site is this, Leo?
allofmp3.com, John. But don't go there. Your ISP will know and will continue to know for the next 2 years.
Yeah, so what?
That's all you need to say is John.
I'm doing
it.
I only go to these things as a journalist. They research them to see exactly what the heck's going on here. I have to inform the public.
Defense.
Look, they've got the new Dixie Chicks LP.
It's actually a pretty good defense. Don't kid yourself. All of MP3.com?
Okay. Yeah. The thing that bugs me about them, instead of just saying, hey, look, we're stealing, fine.
This looks like a commercial site.
It is an unbelievably
built out product. Yeah. I mean, it's professional looking.
They call it AllTunes, not iTunes. It's AllTunes.
Yeah, well, and it looks just like iTunes if you download that desktop app.
Unbelievable. This is unbelievable.
Make no mistake. This is a very professionally run organization.
And they're busting kids in college for downloading stuff while this thing is running?
They can't get these guys.
They can't get them. They've tried.
Can I tell you guys about the story? There was a story related to this.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
People have been trying to shut down all of MP3 for a while, but they're exploiting a really peculiar loophole that basically says that this organization, which may be owned by them, is collecting royalties, you know, and that they have the legal right to sell the music this way. The New York Times is reporting this week that that American negotiators are demanding that all of MP3.com be shut down as a condition of Russia joining the WTO, the World Trade Organization.
Yeah, the U.S. Trade Organization has declared it essentially a pirate haven.
Yeah.
And so there were all these, and there had been kind of an open question. There's, you know, if you just Google like all of MP3 legal, you'll find all of these kind of conflicting arguments with people saying, well, it must be legal. They say they're paying royalties and, you know, we haven't heard anything about it. And so I think that at least the trade arm of the U.S. government right now is trying to put the message out there loud and clear that they consider it to be completely illegal.
Yeah, if you go to the if you ask the RIAA about it, the RIAA says we don't talk about all of MP3. You know, they do all the international stuff is fed into another. I want to say the IFPA is the international organization, and they basically claim it's, you know, they basically say, look, the, you know, all of MP3 may be, you know, paying money into some account somewhere, but none of it has ever been received by an artist.
Well, here's a note that says, I can confirm the legality of all of MP3.com. You can legally buy MP3 songs from this site if it does not break the law, the national legislation of the country in which you will be during that moment. Sorry for my English. Yours faithfully, the assistant to the lawyer of the Russian Society on Multimedia and to Digital Networks. Rom.
Hey, Moose, listen to Squirrel.
Moose and Squirrel say, is
legal.
You
got a dialect coach now? What's going on with you?
No.
Hey,
that was amazing.
I'm going to try to get everybody before this show is over. But this is on some site. I did what you suggested, Molly. This is on some site that talks about the legality. Essentially.
Oh, there's a FAQ available on all of MP3.com.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And essentially, the position is it's legal in Russia, and it's legal if it's legal in the country you're in.
Right. Oh, wow. So essentially, the I think, you know, what most people would argue is it's legal. It is currently, due to this bizarre copyright loophole, legal in Russia. But is it legal for you in the U.S. to buy this music?
Actually,
probably, most certainly no.
It's legal. Russian copyright legislation allows phonograms,
to be performed
publicly over cable.
If you go to the IFPI, which is the international version of the RIAA,
they don't
like the international. Yeah. No, actually, it's now it used to be buried. Like you had to go through one of their annual reports and go to the Eastern European Russian section, like go through 27 pages to find it. The top story now on the IFPI website is that all of MP3.com setting the record straight. First paragraph: all of MP3.com is not a legal service either in Russia or anywhere else.
They say so.
Interesting.
The IFPI is saying that all of MP3, the international organization that the RIAA and all of the world, you know.
So where does the Nine Senses song?
It's the news as of June 2nd, in fact.
This is like those attorneys that were suing everybody and they'd set up the charity to benefit it. You know, the charity money never went anywhere.
So the site claims to have a license from ROMS, a Russian organization that claims to be collecting society, yet ROMS has no rights from their record companies whatsoever to license these pieces of music. ROMS and all of MP3.com are well aware that record companies have not granted authorization for this service.
Well, if there's a common thread to the last two stories, it is that you can try to assert U.S. copyright laws worldwide, but there will always be places where people can do this. And because the internet is fundamentally global, how are you going to shut this stuff down?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the same problem with the Kyoto Treaty. There's a lot of signatories, but it's questionable as to whether, you know, all of the signatories are even,
You know, at least that's,
well,
that's a cumulative
thing. Is copyright violation going to become our great diplomatic message of the 21st century? I mean, that is what is so sort of ridiculous, that we're putting so much effort into kind of politically pressuring these companies over, you know, what is certainly wholesale copyright violation, but is it the most serious issue facing the international community today?
So instead of the white
today?
Man's burden, it's Harvey Weinberg's burden? I mean, what's the...
Yes.
Yeah, Weinstein.
We must protect Hollywood.
Do you
want
to do that voice too now, Leo?
No.
No.
So,
pull back.
You know,
looking,
you know, both of these sites actually, you know, have kind of numbers of downloads and the like. And I don't want to be kind of marginalize the whole thing, but the numbers are rather trivial in the scheme of things compared to the millions and millions of albums that Britney Spears sells.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, I mean, sold. I
don't how think now that we have like blown the, you know, promoted
Britney
it.
Out of
although
this.
Let me just say this as a disclaimer. Well, anyone listening to this broadcast, do not go to these sites.
No,
it's really not.
We're against
you
piracy.
Should not go to yes. these sites. You want to give right. us the URL again, Leo?
Allofmp3.com. But it's we are against piracy. We are for law enforcement agencies, and we love Swedish people.
But I think people should at least be aware that these exist.
Right. ThePirateBay.org.
Or at least beyond that, now you know what your kids are doing with your credit cards.
No. Well, you know, I was on the
yeah. If you're wondering about those charges from the Russian mafia, it's all of MP3.
Well, maybe we're supporting terrorism by buying stuff from all of MP3. Do you ever think of that?
Oh, probably. I'm really almost certain that we are.
I know that when I buy cigarettes without a tax stamp, I'm supporting terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
You smoke?
No, but I like to support terrorism. So I always buy cigarettes whenever I can without tax stamps.
Yeah, you get the yeah.
Yeah, at some point along the line.
Yes, at this point I don't care anymore. Come and get me, copper. I'm like I'm like Jimmy Cagney in Public Enemy.
Oh yeah, exactly the same.
And Michael Gohagan is slowly creeping out the door.
You going to do Jimmy Cagney for us?
No.
I know. I was going to say there was no Kappa.
Kappa. Come and get me, Kappa. King of the world.
Now, see, I was under the impression that most of these sites were dark. I feel kind of dumb now that I didn't know about these
two
sites.
Well, I think that's what the RIA would like you to think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the MPAA would like
them.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why all of MP3 is so scary to them, because really, you would not ever, I mean, there's no, you know, sex ads lined up along either side.
No, it's pro.
Half naked women. I mean, it looks like a legitimate business. There's no reason for you as a consumer to end up there and think this must be against the law.
Well, how?
It's got this great iTunes-like product. I mean, you know,
this reminds me of when last time I visited Malaysia. You can go. You go to a big mall there, and they're selling openly selling. DVDs with all the right packaging and the whole thing, and you can actually view them there to make sure they're good ones. And these are excellent copies, and they sell them right at the right out in the open. And you can come back, and if anybody would question that, you're bringing these bootleg discs back, and I assume they are, but I don't really know. There's no way to really tell because it's it seems to be. I can see where people would think, wow, they get the all I can say is the prices are cheap. I just think because they're
and
like,
and then how on earth would those DVD sniffing dogs for FedEx ever know the difference between that DVD and a...
There's DVD sniffing dogs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Didn't we do that story a couple weeks ago?
I think it was 2 weeks ago. It must have gotten dropped because of the Memorial Day.
Are they looking for polycarbonate? What are they sniffing for?
Well, I don't know. FedEx hasn't really said. They just said that somehow they have these magical DVD sniffing dogs that know the difference between a pirated DVD and a non-pirated DVD, and so they can open up your mail.
Yeah.
I think that they can... It's possible that some of those writable DVDs might be odorous. That's the only thing I
they're,
can
they're
think
actually
of.
No, they're just identifying packages containing DVDs.
Yeah, they're sniffing
and then,
for polycarbonate.
Customs. It's happening in Britain. They are using. There was a trial of dogs, and packages containing DVDs were opened and inspected to see if they were legitimate shipments.
I just think it's great that one of the featured bands is Thievery Corporation.
I saw that at allofmp3.com.
They're a pretty old. That's actually a pretty old punk band. They've been around for a long time.
Well, their time has come now.
What band
baby.
Is this?
Thievery Corporation.
I like them. They're like
featured
Black Flag
on allofmp3.com.
So Microsoft has decided to remove PDFs from Office 2007 after a threat of a lawsuit from Adobe.
Adobe wants you to keep using their miserable reader software for as long as possible.
This makes me mad because, it also puzzles me because one of the beauties of OS X is PDF is built in throughout the entire OS. What are they paying a license fee? What's the deal?
Why are you puzzled?
How are they doing that?
Well, why is it that Adobe doesn't want Microsoft to do it, but isn't doing anything about Apple doing it?
It's an open standard for everyone but Microsoft. Microsoft is the only organization that's not allowed to use the open specs for the Adobe Reader.
In the law, and then they're in their copyright.
Yeah,
No. They open sourced, the ability to kind of build your own reader, and then they sued Microsoft when Microsoft started to integrate the technology or threatened to sue Microsoft when Microsoft tried to integrate. This is something you're almost never going to hear. I'm defending Microsoft from being bullied by another company.
I think you're right. right. And is it because of market share that they don't worry about Apple?
I think Adobe's afraid that if they don't have Reader on everybody's desktops, then or or I can't think of the name of the really cool free reader for Adobe. Not that Adobe Reader isn't free, but the not
Adobe Reader, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not Adobe pain in the ass downloading everything every 5 minutes.
So their fear is that if this is included in everything that the average consumer uses, nobody's actually going to purchase the Adobe product.
Well,
what's going to happen is nobody's going to know who Adobe is except for, you know, professional Photoshop users.
But my puzzlement is, I don't understand, is if you open source it, you open source it. I mean, if it's an open standard, how can they stop Microsoft?
See, that's the crux of what makes this such a fascinating story, Leo. It seems to be an open standard as long as Microsoft doesn't try to integrate.
They wanted to pursue it in the EU, which maybe means that there is some sort of difference. I mean, the antitrust action is still going on. Maybe that's what they're going to do. In fact, I think it is what they're going to do is threaten antitrust action. So they're not saying it's basically blackmail. They're saying if you use PDF, we're going to raise this issue in the EU where you're still up on antitrust charges.
Yeah.
And they're essentially telling Microsoft how to build its own product, because what they want to do is allow you in Office, right, to save Word, Excel, and PowerPoint as PDFs.
As
and Adobe is saying that, yeah, and Adobe is saying, no, we're threatening antitrust action unless you remove that feature from Office and offer it separately for a fee.
Yeah, and what's funny is they've been negotiating on this. Wall Street Journal says they've been negotiating this for like 4 months, and finally Adobe just broke down and said, uh-uh, you put it in there, we're going to hit you with an antitrust lawsuit.
Well, this, I have to say, I'm with you, Patrick, on defending Microsoft on this. It is unbelievable. It's extortion, it strikes me as. No, didn't I get in trouble for saying something was extortion?
You want to watch that one.
It's not extortion.
We are not suggesting that Adobe is extorting.
No.
We are suggesting Adobe's behavior regarding Microsoft is a little strange.
It's undue pressure using, I think, something kind of really unrelated. They're saying we're going to cause trouble for you.
Right. So it's only not good if you're a monopoly. It's perfectly legal for everybody else to do this.
Well,
it's
that's
only
right.
Microsoft.
Exactly, yeah. But if you're huge, then you can't use our PDF free, which we made and distributed to other people.
Microsoft should just go and put out some sort of a public patch through a third party that does the whole thing on the side.
Well, that's the thing. You can download free programs that do this now. And there's cute PDF. There's a lot of good PDF programs. Adobe spokesperson Holly Campbell said that Adobe is concerned Microsoft might attempt to use its influence in the PC software space to quash competition, starting with the inclusion of the PDF format in Office 2007.
It seems to me that they should be more worried that Microsoft would build and distribute and evangelize an alternative format.
Do you think that's what's going on underneath?
I mean, isn't Microsoft also building a competitor to JPEG?
They were. Yeah, also to PDF. They were for a while talking about a portable document.
They backed away a little bit from the...
Did they?
I mean, it's still going to be in there, but I don't think...
Encourage them to do that.
I mean, if Adobe keeps this up, you'd think that Microsoft would say, all right, then.
Yeah, but you got to remember something. On the flip side, for the alternative for JPEG, until the JPEG lawsuit, I can't think of the name of the company that was suing everybody rights to JPEG. Until that was thrown out by the Supreme Court, it was actually a pretty smart business move for Microsoft to have a complete alternative to JPEG lined up.
Was this Ping or was this something else?
No, it was an internal.
It's a new, it's like Windows Media Image File or something, but it's cropped up again just within the last couple of days.
I rescind that statement. They could have just gone to Ping, but maybe they thought it wasn't good enough. But yeah, that's, you know, with the JPEG threat hanging around, where they might want an alternate... That would be an equivalent to JPEG.
We had the whole thing with CompuServe and GIF.
Yeah. It was a Sperry or somebody had the GIF license.
Yeah, that was. I remember that.
Wait till somebody decides to go after MP3. What will that do?
Well, Fraunhofer owns it. I don't think
everybody. It's all licensed. All the MP3 stuff is licensed.
So pity
you guys
the poor.
Seen this?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, have you guys seen, I actually have to scoot for dinner, but have you guys seen the article, Slashdot posted a link. Remember like the shortwave stations that were always broadcasting numbers that everybody assumed was like, you know, CIA type organizations blasting them out? Someone's apparently putting number stations on VoIP so that you can call in to a VoIP, to this VoIP number and actually
numbers?
Listen to the, yeah, and listen to the numbers as they're being broadcasted.
Is this like the lottery numbers, the numbers racket numbers? Is that what you're talking about? What are these numbers?
No. For years and years, you can tune into certain shortwave channels.
Just hear one, two.
Ham radios, ham radio enthusiasts refer to them as number stations, right? Nobody really knows.
It's like a test signal or something?
Where it's coming from, but they're usually either reading streams of numbers or of words or of letters. And sometimes it's mechanically generated voices. Sometimes there's in different languages. You know, it could be children, it could be male, could be female. And a lot of the assumptions is that they're communications used to send messages to spies, right?
Oh, yeah, if you just keep doing it, yeah, there must be something in data. And
so we're just getting ready to release that as a podcast, actually.
That'd be great. C 512 Utabaga.
But there's a couple. There's you can now actually dial in. There's at least two VoIP numbers you can dial into and hear these numbers. And you hear the pre-recorded message that's there.
Yeah. And I bet it is for spies or whatever. But
aliens, it's coming from another planet.
How would you get
No. It's a known fact that these are the way that people have been communicating with the flying saucers.
you've been hanging out in Pahrump again. You've been hanging out with Art Bell again, John.
John's living in a double wide in Pahrump. People don't know this. Actually, didn't Art Bell move to the Philippines? He got a Filipino wife and he's in the Philippines now. So there is actually a space lot available in Pahrump if anybody wants to move.
Well, this obviously begs for a Wikipedia search.
I'm moving there. What's for dinner tonight, Patrick?
I think I'm going to I don't know if I'm going to go for the chowder at one of the places down here or if I'm going to go for a cheesesteak. I've been jamming on like Eastern European food and kosher food and pizza.
Right.
It's just so much better in New
York.
Do
the cheesesteak so I don't have to, Patrick. Go for the cheesesteak.
For you, I will do this.
Get the big peppers, though. I like the big peppers.
Here we go for you. At the same time, Art Bell announced leaving his longtime homestead in Nevada, relocating to the Philippines, where he will continue to host Coast to Coast AM weekend editions via an ISDN connection.
Isn't that amazing?
So as of early June 2006, he has not returned to his hosting duties. He left on April 29, 2006, and is expected to remain there for at least a year. And apparently he owns a radio station, KYE.
That only leaves the whorehouses, the fireworks factories, and the casinos in Pahrump now.
Actually, Pahrump is at a huge – it's become a bedroom community for Las Vegas.
I can't wait to put this in the show notes.
Brother.
There's a couple races I'm in that start in Pahrump.
Yeah, Spring
because
Valley.
The Herbst.
Do you do these races?
I used to race cars, so there's Spring Valley. There's a racetrack out there.
Finally,
but I know you know.
Finally, somebody Patrick can talk to.
Well, he's talking about off road races. So.
Yeah. Very different. Yeah,
it's like all of the stupidity of road racing with like added pain and trauma.
Do you want to go now to dinner, or do you want to hang out for a little longer?
I want to hang out, but I'm going to scamper to go to dinner. So
okay, well,
thank you all for letting me join in.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Patrick. We will see you on June 16th, right, at Yahoo.
Yes.
We are doing a special edition of This Week in Tech Live from Yahoo for part of Podcast Academy 3, and Patrick will be part of the panel along with me and Doug Kay, and we're hoping to get Waz and Alex Lindsay, and we're going to have a nice group of people. So
it will be fun.
We'll see you then. And I'm still working on trying to get together, and we'll see next Friday if I can. We're going to do the twit from the Apple Store if we can get in there, because VloggerCon is in San Francisco, the first convention of video podcasters, people like Andrew Cogdon and Amanda of Rocket Boom and Callie.
I thought Rocket Boom had decided it was IPTV and not a blog anymore.
I don't know what it is. Now it's got imitators, This what is it called?
Is that VloggerCon.org?
Vlogger. V-L-O-G-G-E-R. VloggerCon.
Oh, Vlogger.
Yeah, so that's going to be a big event. If we can, we're hoping
just rolls off the tongue, doesn't
vlog.
It?
What a terrible word. Vlog. Someone's about to blog.
I can see why someone would choose IPTV.
Yeah. Well, you're a vlogger. Don't you?
I guess I sort of am a vlogger.
I know Patrick's a vlogger.
It's not so much a blog.
I've never heard of VloggerCon.
Yeah,
really
DLTV's massive. I mean, you're probably one of the big ones, the big players.
This is yet another conference I have no knowledge of and haven't been invited to be a media sponsor of.
Is this the term that they've settled on for video podcast? Vlogger, vidcast, videocast, vlogger.
I thought vodcast was okay.
I think Vodcast is a little better. Well, Vlogger is also somewhat limiting because it implies sort of the blog thing.
Yeah, it's a bad. And it's just, it sounds like an Eastern European mishmash.
What is a blog? It's extremely how do you spell this video blog word you're saying?
V-L-O.
Vlogger?
Vlogger. It's just Vlogger with a V.
V-L-O-G-G-E-R.
Two G.
I've seen this at the Swedish American Hall.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah. I'm sure you've been to a few punk
concerts.
It's going
to be room for like
it all comes back to Sweden.
It's the Vlogger.
It's back to like TSOL with Patrick and stuff.
Actually,
so this, meatballs galore.
In Swedish, Vlogger means true love. So there you go.
Do you have a voice for that?
Yeah, I do. But I'll save that for my other podcast.
But there's a lot going on the West Coast at the end of the month. We've got VloggerCon. There's a BloggerCon. There's Supernova. There's up north. There's Gnomedex. I mean.
Oh, yeah. When's Gnomedex?
Gnomedex is at the very end of June.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Seattle?
You know, I talked to Chris a year ago, and he was thinking of bringing all of us together to do a Gnomedex, but I guess...
He's still doing it, but he's not bringing you.
Not bringing me.
I don't know.
I was one once.
Yeah, right.
A long time ago. Many years ago.
But he's doing that. That's whatever the last weekend of the month is.
So, Patrick, we'll let you go have your cheesesteak, and thank you for joining us. DL.TV is the place. You'll be back next week with more. What do they do? Do they keep doing shows if you're not around?
I actually pre-taped one. Pre-taped one with Robert to roll Tuesday, right. And then our next live one is on Thursday next week.
Well, have a nice vacation. You deserve it.
Thank you. And if anybody has the word on VloggerCon, let me know at dl.tv@ziffdavis.com.
I'm sure they'd love to have you there. And I'll tell you what, I'll let you know if we do get the Apple Store for Friday and you can be a part of it. It's part of their, they have a meet the vlog.
I don't have, you know, not to interrupt, but I will. I don't have a lot of confidence in a conference when you type VloggerCon into Google and it doesn't show up anywhere.
You know, maybe, I got it. If it's all one word.
Don't
if
forget
you
the
type
two
it
G's.
In as all one word, then it's the third link.
Oh.
Yeah. Sean, after vloggercon.blogspot.com, okay, which is all too expected.
John's rapidly turning into the little old man who can't figure
you know,
this stuff
way
out.
I see it. It stinks.
I don't like it, no matter what.
I'm furious.
Oh, this is too slick for my taste.
Oh, no, it's too slick. First you couldn't find it. Now it's too slick. All right.
This is not your average tech
easy,
conference,
guys.
Kids.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Take
what
care.
Kind of a term? What
I'll drop you off so you don't have to be subjected to any more of this.
Oh, yeah. Bye, Patrick.
Bye, Patrick.
Bye.
So I pity the poor Vonage customers who thought they were getting a deal on the big IPO at $17. The Vonage stock tanks to...
I would pity them, except they really thought they were getting a good deal.
Yeah.
On a company that has never been profitable, has said it will never be profitable, and really has no plan to become profitable.
So everybody got excited.
Can you say lawsuits, though?
And now Vonage is saying, no, you even though our stock is now down to below $12, you still have to buy it at $17. And probably an SEC rule of some kind, but I just...
No, I'm sorry. Can you try to re-explain the story again?
So Vonage went public a couple of weeks ago and made an offer I thought at the time seemed very generous. We would love for those of, 10,000 customers that are really good customers, we're going to give you an offer. You can buy the stock at the going off price, at the initial offering price of what turned out to be $17. And a lot of people took them up on this deal. One little problem. By the end of the day, the stock had dropped down to $12, and these people were stuck buying it at $17. Well,
yeah,
Vonage
that happens.
Vonage did has mm-hmm. called the stock market. Vonage announced this week that customers who had made that agreement must follow through and buy the shares, even though they're worth heck of a lot more or less, I should say.
Less.
Of course,
yeah,
if it had been more, they would have been happy to buy them, right? But.
Well, so in other words, wait a minute, let me get this straight. So Vonage made this offer and they didn't collect the money beforehand?
Well, apparently...
they had a commitment and now they got to fulfill it. But, you know, if it had gone up...
A commitment? This sounds like public radio?
I pledge
$17 for a... forget it.
Well, you get a tote bag with it.
It's not surprising to note that they have, as of today, already been sued.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
A class action lawsuit under claiming that they violated securities law.
But first of all, the greed of the people who bought, you're right, Molly, it was dumb. If they had done a little research, they would have realized it was a terrible deal anyway. But they were rubbing their hands with glee.
They really were.
And now they're saying, well, but wait a minute, we're going to lose money in the stock market.
And, you know, it's not the dot-com days anymore. You can't just go public with $500 million in debt.
Interesting thing in the prospectus, though, which is apparently, I don't know anything about this, but they say, the news reports, Mercury News says it's unusual that there is a clause in the prospectus that says that Vonage will indemnify the banks for any losses arising from customers who refuse to pay for their shares. So it may be that Vonage, it may be the banks demanded this up front, or that Vonage knew this would happen and was preparing an out. I'm sure that law requires that. I mean, otherwise it's called a buyback. I mean, if they agree to buy the stock at a higher price or not to make them buy it.
Well, I just guaranteed. I mean, the Vonage is going to have to take it out of the proceeds and pay back the investment bankers. But, you know, it reminds me of whenever that was when Lycos first went public, and I saw that prospectus. How many years ago was that, Leo?
Oh, a long time.
And I just remember reading, the company has no revenues and has no prospect of revenues in the foreseeable future. And I'm thinking, you know, what's going on here?
This is not a forward-looking statement, but we're nothing.
But I think, you know, actually, they unfortunately, perhaps these people will have a good case for a lawsuit.
Because
they basically are going to be able to claim that they were misled by management or misled by the investment bankers.
And those
hold up.
What their lawsuit says now is that there is a securities law that requires that a company recommending the purchase of or sale of its securities to a customer must have a reasonable basis for believing that the recommendation is suitable for the customer.
So I think
if your own prospectus says you're not going to be profitable,
the crux is, did they recommend it or merely offer it?
Right.
All right. But you see, an underwriting bank is almost by virtue of what it does, it's recommending.
Well, these things are always written up by lawyers. I'm sure they didn't do anything wrong in that regard.
But we'll see. We'll see.
We shall see.
I love that there's a Reuters story today, too, that the headline is, or from June 2nd, Vonage debut shows IPOs need profitable outlook.
Oh, really?
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
No kidding. I'll be darned.
You know, I think that Vonage, they missed their window. They could have, I think, been a very successful IPO if they had done this long before Google AT&T Talk and Skype and all this other stuff came around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, will they be successful long term? What do you think is the future for Vonage? No,
too much competition.
Mm. Too easy to do, huh?
Too easy to do.
Too much free competition.
Yeah. Well, and you're up against AT&T, call Vantage, and about there's several hundred VoIP providers. You know, there's Sun Rocket. I mean, there's just dozens of these guys. No, hundreds of these guys. Speaking of competitive arenas, Microsoft is I'm sorry Patrick left because I'm sure he would have had something to say about this. OneCare is now official, and you can buy it. $49 a year, protect up to 3 computers, antivirus, anti-spyware. It's kind of ironic that the company that made the broken operating system that needed OneCare in the first place now charges $50 to protect it.
I think that really is a hard pill to swallow.
And McAfee's
everybody's been complaining about this. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, to defend them, I mean, the problem exists at least, and I think a lot of people will buy this solution at $50 a year. Protects 3 computers. If you're buying a new computer, I think a lot of people, it's cheaper than, you know, spanty spyware, antivirus, and
is this
from Microsoft
or what is this?
Yeah, it's online. It is. It's Microsoft Defender. It's an antivirus that they acquired and. It's automatically updated. And I think because it comes from Microsoft, that's the real issue is that, you know, companies like McAfee say, well, we're going to do it. We're going to do that too. But why would you buy it from Symantec or McAfee, both of whom are going to do it when you can buy it from the company that made the OS?
Yeah, this is a company that broke it in the first place.
Right.
They're probably
they
in the best position to be able to fix it.
They're in good shape. They're in good shape.
You know, there's an interesting story that not to completely change the subject, but I thought this was kind of fascinating is that, Canon announced that they're going to stop developing these inexpensive digital cameras. They've decided to just basically go along with their just essentially take over the high end of the market and not worry about it.
That's interesting. So even the little point and shoots, they're not going to do those. They're to only do is it digital SLRs or what?
Yeah, the digital. Well, I mean, they own that market now, the digital
SLRs. Very good.
It's very profitable. You can sell a lot of lenses and they're expensive and they have all the things that you want to make money. Those little cameras are, and especially Canon never made a good little one anyway.
It's funny because I just bought a Canon SD630.
You just bought a little Canon?
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
Wait, is that what they said, really? That they're going to... I thought they said they were going to stop making SLRs that were not digital. I think those Canon power shots are like some of the most popular.
That market,
well, you're right. I misread the story.
Yeah, yeah, those Canon power shots are.
That's completely the opposite.
Exactly.
We're okay, getting out of the film.
What you heard was my prediction. I'm telling you, Canon is going to stop making those little cameras.
You might
I was
be right.
Sitting here all shy, like, well, it is John Dvorak. I don't know
he
if
must
I can
know what he's talking
jump
about.
In here.
Hey, you know, I just wing it. I'm
but
ad-libbing
I think
most
I know how to read.
Well, somebody chimed in.
Well, I'm just thrilled because, you know.
And by the way, you're supposed to go, you're full of crap, Dvorak.
Oh, yeah. We got to work Molly into the routine.
Jeez.
You must edit that in, will you?
I'm new. I'm still being too polite.
So what is the story now, John?
No, the story is that essentially they've stopped making the old-fashioned cameras.
Yeah, they're going to stop making
film stage, right.
I mean,
they're going to stop developing new film cameras, but they will still support. This is kind of one of the things that was misreported when this first came out. They're still going to be supporting their old kind of film ones. They're just not going to end selling them for a little while, you know, maybe another year and a half.
Can't you use those lenses on the digital ones too?
Yeah, they're all universal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, why not support them? There's still a
market
for
it. You know, Canon actually made did the smart thing with their DSLRs, which was to develop lenses specifically for them, whereas Nikon really took a while to figure that out. Nikon stuck with we're going to use our lenses. They're universal. You can use them on the old film camera and you can use them on the new camera. Mm-hmm. And it's really a dead end because those old film cameras are, I mean, everyone's going to stop making them. Let's face it. Those things are...
They adopted that lens mount a couple years ago. That was a big step for them. You had to go buy new lenses.
Canon?
A couple years back.
And is it's a smart mount, right? So it has the sensors built in and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got two or three. I mean, I love them. They're great. And I'm not even a pro photographer. It's just
it's interesting
gadget.
To see how Canon has really moved forward in the digital market to kind of take first place and put Nikon kind of in the back seat a little bit.
It is interesting, although I have a Nikon D70, and I love it.
Me too. It's my favorite camera. Oh, I love it.
You have a D70, a film camera?
No. John, so there's this thing called digital.
Oh, the digital, the D7, I'm sorry.
D70.
I'm thinking of the N70.
No, D70.
D per Walt Mossberg is now D for digital.
Oh, well, so anyway, if Walt says it, it must be true.
Well, you use a D70? Isn't that kind of...
It's a little high end for a DSLR, and I'm not a pro photographer, but so worth it. The colors just are wonderful. But I will say it is a lot easier, I have found, to swap out the Canon lenses.
Is it?
Like, just the mount is a little less tricky than the Nikon.
Yeah, you know, I've shot with both those cameras, the Nikon high-end and the Canons. I think, I hate to say it, because I've never been a big fan of them. And I have the Nikons. I have an old N890, and I used to have an F4. I have to say, I think the Canon stuff is unbelievably great.
Really? See, I thought the D70 looked better than the Rebel. Because to me, it was between the D70 and the Rebel, because that was a similar price point, and I wasn't going to go all the way up to, like, the EOS.
Yeah, the D70 was a Rebel killer.
Yeah, so the D70
the Rebel
to me
XT
was...
is very good. What is that? What you have, Michael? Yeah. Is it an XT?
You know, I actually bought one of those and then sold it right away and bought a D10 and
you
then
bought
a
the
D20.
Higher end. Yeah, they're great cameras, and I think the XT. You're right, John. That the first digital Rebel was the first sub $1,000 SLR, and then Nikon comes along with the D70 and says, "See, we can really."
That was great market penetration, though. I mean, that really was an opportunity for people to get involved in a nice digital camera that they could swap their lenses on.
And then the XT, which was the second generation Rebel. Really did a good job. Everything was faster. It did a much, much nicer job.
Rebel is a way cooler name.
Well, you had, remember, was it Andre Agassi was the, for a long time, was their spokesman for years.
The EOS system, yeah. Any other stories that people have?
Well, that just reminds me.
I got more bogus stories than you want to hear.
Yeah, anything else you'd like to make up, John?
Hey, here's a good one. The Conroe L, Cord 2 Duo. I mean, did you hear about this, by the way? I keep forgetting to do this. Apparently, there's some chip floating around. I can't remember the number. It's a 400 series or something like that. That's a cheap chip. I got to get the details on this. But apparently, you can overclock this thing and you apparently turn on a dual core mechanism. And next thing you know, you got like a $1,500 chip for $150.
Intel's done this before, you know, because of the way they bin sort their chips. They they're so good, frankly. Their manufacture process is so good that they don't have slower chips. So in the old days, remember, you could overclock the Celerons like like crazy. And I think that that's Intel's known for, in fact, taking, you know, one die and modifying traces and stuff and making it, you know, be a stupider chip.
You know, one of my readers sent me a link to this story, and I'm going to just request that they do this, resend it to me so I can post it, because I, for some reason, I dropped the ball on this story, and I just can't remember any of the details, and I need to get the link.
The highly overclockable, hackable chip.
I think it was covered on Tom's Hardware.
All right. We'll see
so
if we can
you go
find
there,
it.
You can find it in right. detail.
I'm sure you'll be deluged at Dvorak.org/blog.
You know what I really need? What I really need from I need it. You know, it in Reykjavik, there's a Hard Rock Cafe. I believe it's still there. And I need to get my – I had a sweater that I bought there, which says Hard Rock Reykjavik, and it's a sweater. It's the only place I know that has sweaters. Everybody else sells T-shirts and sweatshirts and whatever.
Well, it's Iceland. Like a, you need a sweater.
A nice Icelandic sweater. But it's so old since I haven't been there for so long. I need somebody to get me – I'll pay for it, but I need somebody to get me a new one.
I'm sure we can arrange that.
And there's got to – we have to have at least one Icelandic listener.
We do, because I cannot offend them. I don't know the Icelandic accent. So we actually haven't chased stuff for Icelandic listeners
yet. It's probably like
No, it's not. Actually, it's a little more, I would say it's a little more like a kind of a split between a Finn and a Norwegian and a Danish accent, if you can imagine.
Can you do that for us, John?
No.
He wants a sweater. Wait till he gets a sweater.
Can you just do it in phonemes, like just some sort of noise?
You'd be rich if you could do that, John.
Did this O'Reilly trademark Web 2.0
thing
blow
over? We didn't talk about that, and we should talk about that.
That's what I was going to say. We're talking about Walt Mossberg and D. I wonder if he registers D as a trademark, and none of us can use the letter D again.
So O'Reilly, now actually it really isn't, I don't blame O'Reilly on this. I blame IDG Conferences, but IDG Conferences does a conference with O'Reilly called Web 2.0. Apparently, some small European...
Which is available on IT Conversations, by the way.
Thank you very much. But some small... I don't know who it was, but some small European... I think it was in Ireland, wasn't it, that they were going to do a conference?
Yeah, actually, a non-profit.
It was in Ireland.
A non-profit in Ireland wants to do a Web 2.0, and they
that
get a cease
puppies.
And desist. Yes, that's right, and never club seals. And they got a cease and desist letter. But now, people blamed O'Reilly. And I think
it's
IDG.
O'Reilly never put the kibosh on it. It's Tim O'Reilly that invented the term, so he could have stopped it.
Well, they trademarked. That's right. In fact, Tim O'Reilly was invited to the conference, as I remember.
Well, yeah, that's what they say. But,
Tim O'Reilly.
Next thing you know, the guys are sued.
Yeah, Tim O'Reilly and John Battelle from FM Publishing put that conference together.
Right.
And then I think they sold it, if I'm not mistaken, to CMP. Is that right?
Was it CMP still, or
it's
IDG?
A joint, no, it's
IDG,
a joint
IDG,
service
right,
mark.
IDG.
It right. is a joint service mark okay. between O'Reilly and CMP.
But
and CMP filed for it, I think, in the first place.
Yeah, they actually filed for the registration.
And of course, right. as you know. If
but
you
O'Reilly is still very much involved with the conference. Sure. And I think people got so worked up about this because they sort of hope
they
that
want
O'Reilly,
Tim O'Reilly
you know,
to
because
stumble.
They loved him and they hoped that yeah. O'Reilly wouldn't be involved in this kind of right. thing. And it felt like the man coming down on the little guy.
And of course, it happened while Tim was on vacation just to make life worse.
Right.
Conveniently.
Yeah. And, well, so, and of course, the worst thing is it happened a week before the conference. So it was really, it wasn't the kind of thing where you gave him fair warning.
By the way, I don't know if the IT Conversations has this or who has it. You can look it up. But the last, I think it was the last Web 2.0 show. There was a keynote given by Bruce Sterling.
It's a great keynote.
It's absolutely a great keynote.
He's
it's just
brilliant.
One of the best things I've ever heard for a long time.
No, and I've heard it. I think I heard it on IT Conversations. I think it is.
I'd recommend listening to it.
Just go to itconversations.com. And
so you guys do have it. But you have the kind of a truncated version. You don't have the whole
Got
thing,
the
right?
whole thing. Every word, okay. every stutter.
I would recommend you go there and get a copy and put it on one of your iPods or something. Because it's really an excellent summation. From Sterling's kind of a cynical guy in a funny way,
but
he's not as bad as we are, but typically he's got some
worse.
Interesting observations, a little off the wall, and I have to say, this was an outstanding speech.
Yeah, three words, tour de force. Or is it? I don't know if de is a word, unless you're Walt Mossberg, and then it's
D. I don't know if that's really technically three words, but maybe.
I thought the interesting thing with that story was how it kind of exploded in the blogosphere and turned from a letter to a lawsuit, and just people
a
were feeding
very
it.
Very typical response from the blogosphere.
I know. Tim O'Reilly wrote this letter when he finally did come back from vacation and said, sort of explained the whole kerfuffle, and then said, I'm I'm really disappointed, essentially, in the blogosphere, and this whole experience has sort of shaken my faith in the collective intelligence of the blogosphere. And I thought, like, have you ever been to the blogosphere?
Yeah, this happened.
I mean, that's what they do. It's what they live for.
I'm so disappointed.
Go have a drink with Dan Rather and, you know, relax.
I think rule number one of getting a trademark is you have to defend it the minute you see somebody use it.
If you're going to get involved with the blogosphere, expect the worst.
Expect the worst from the blogosphere.
Because they don't have their names attached to their little account.
You know, the funny thing is that we probably should get over it, because it's like getting mentioned on Dig. You know, you get a big spike, and 2 days later, you're forgotten.
Right.
Right.
I never seen things turn over so fast.
Welcome to the new world. I mean, I think it's the way everything is. We have short attention span theater here. What were
we
talking about?
I think a dog just started up outside my house, and it might be time for me to go have dinner, too.
All right. We've all just lost interest. Molly Wood, who gets the prize for the first twit to use the word kerfuffle in a sentence. We thank you for joining us.
I was going
to
say something.
from, of course, Buzz Out Loud and CNET. And it is buzzoutloud.cnet.com, is that?
There's that. And then buzz.cnet.com is kind of home of all the buzz, okay. Which is...
She's the Buzzette.
The video podcast and the blog and
that,
the column.
Is that demeaning to call you a Buzzette?
A Buzzette.
It's better than a buzzer.
It is a little bit better than a buzzer.
She's the buzzer at buzz.cnet.com.
Buzzinator.
Thanks for having
me. It's great to have you. Please come back anytime you want, Molly.
Thank you. I'd love to.
We love having you on. Thanks. Take care. John C. Dvorak, dvorak.org/blog.
And don't forget pcmag.com and marketwatch.com.
How could we forget? Any books coming out? Anything in the near future?
I'm working on my. In fact, we're going to have to do a special on this. I'm working on my deconstruction of the boom and bust cycle of the U.S. economy.
To read that.
Yeah, you're going to get a kick out. It's going to be a monograph, so it's not going to be that long. It'll be about 90 pages.
John claims that we're in the boom cycle, but about 2000.
We're starting it. No, the boom cycle should start next year, in 2007.
Okay. And by 2009, it's all over.
We're toast. Yeah. In October. In a perfect world, it would actually be in October, but you know these things sometimes shift a little bit, which I discuss quite in detail.
Is that why the crash of 29 was in October? There's something about October.
Actually, you know, if you start looking at crashes, they take a lot of them take place either some of them take place in the spring, a few of them, but so many of them take place in October. Huh. It's really kind of weird.
That's interesting.
You know, it has that. The function behind that is manifold, so it's hard to say, you know, specifically what causes that phenomenon.
Well, I think it's probably Canon abandoning its low price cameras, I would guess. the first thing that would, you know, strike me.
I'm telling you, I think all these companies are going to drop these. You know what? Just to finish on this topic, you know, I've talked to Kodak about this, and they're kind of. They got out of their high end cameras, and I think they may have some problems on the low end too. All these guys are scared to death. All these camera companies, and Canon will be in this boat too, of Sony and Panasonic, because they. And what I was told was that Sony and Panasonic have a different model for making money, and they have a different model for what their margin should be, and the traditional camera companies just can't deal with it.
Well, the prices are dropping dramatically. I mean, they're much lower this year than they were last year for 6-megapixel cameras, 5-megapixel cameras. I mean, they're just a couple hundred bucks now.
Well, it's also getting to the point where you're not going to replace them as often as you used to. I mean, it skyrocketed so quickly, but you get to 6, 7, 8 megapixels.
Right. Yeah, once you get to
an extra two of them?
We're saturated. Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah. Although I'm impressed with how Kodak has managed to turn itself around. I mean, here's a company that, look what happened to Polaroid. I mean, they must have been on death's door.
Well, you know, Kodak's an interesting, I'm going to visit the company. I was supposed to go a couple months ago, or last month I didn't do it. But they have this new little camera with the two lenses, which I thought was kind of silly when I first saw it. But then I'm hearing more and more good things about it. I'm trying to get a copy to check it out.
Okay. Well, we'll start scouting for a spot in the backyard to bury the gold bars, and we'll talk to you at least on the 16th. Oh, no, you won't be at Yahoo, but maybe we can see you next week on...
next week.
Yeah, especially if we can do it from the Apple Store. I'm still working on that. Thank you, John.
See ya.
Bye-bye. And he's gone. You hear that sound? That's him going... Bye-bye. And I do want to thank Doug and Mike for actually coming here to the inner lair of the quit Sanctum Sanctorum. And congratulations, Doug, to your third year as a podcaster at IT Conversations. That's
Thank
really
you. Cool. And you know, we really should take this opportunity to tell people what it's really like here at the home of Twit. But time's short. We really just don't have time to finish that off.
He's sitting on the corner of my bed. I'll give you some idea.
I do, Leo. I do want to remind everybody that the Podcast Academy is June 15th and 16th at Yahoo. Of course, there will be a live recording of Twit on the afternoon of the 16th, but we do have some seats left. So if you're interested, go to podcastacademy.com, and that will get you where you need to go. Like I say, do have a few seats left, so we hope to see as many of the Twit listeners there as we can get.
And you've got some great, it's a 2-day conference, so it's 2 days to learn all about podcasting, starting with Michael Gohagan right and early on Thursday morning doing Podcasting 101. And some of the biggest names besides Michael, you got Paul Figiani, who is, he's the guy who does the point. I mean, he's the king of podcast equipment.
he's the man.
Gear.
That's
he's
right.
the gear guy. Doug's going to be doing some seminars. It's Don Loeb from Feedburner. Tim Birkin, who is not only does his own podcast, the Podcast Brothers, but he's the guy who puts together the Podcast Expo year, and that's coming up again in September this year.
That is right, the end of September. But we've also, you know, typically appropriate for Twit, we have a vlogger. We have the vlogger, the ultimate vlogger to close out the event will be Eric Rice from ericrice.com, as he always says.
Yeah.
And Eric's always about 2 years ahead of everybody else, so I'm looking forward to hearing what Eric has to say.
He was doing video blogging well before anybody else. Yeah. Michael Gohagan, it's great to see you, and we don't get you on enough. I'd love to see you again. Grape Radio, of course, is the ultimate wine podcast. And thank you for the bottle. I didn't tell John about the bottle of wine. He's a Bordeaux guy. This is a Pinot. I think I'm safe. You keep his mitts off.
That's
of that.
A good one, too.
And, of course, the Disney podcast and all the other things.
Disneyland. Was it Disneyland.com/podcast and Real Reviews. And
Real Reviews. I knew I was forgetting something. Real Reviews.
The book, all kinds
podcast.
Of good stuff.
Yeah.
Podcast Solutions.
Buy the book.
Yeah, we're actually carried in Apple stores now.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I know. I saw that the other day. I was in the Apple store. And
I was going to turn them cover out, you know.
Yes, that's the Dvorak always does that. We thank you for joining us. And we, by the way, I want to thank AOL Radio for support for the bandwidth on this podcast. And Cashfly as well, who has offered to thank Cashfly very much because they've offered to carry the Ogg Vorbis and AAC versions, the kind of off versions of the podcast. But a lot of people like them and want them. And so the BitTorrent hasn't been working too well, so Cashfly to the rescue as usual. I know they rescued a system when their BitTorrent wasn't working too well. They're like the cavalry that just comes marching in when you need them. And we thank you for being here. We're sorry we took a week off, but I promise you lots more to come next week. We'll let you know about VloggerCon, and of course in 2 weeks we'll be at the Podcast Academy June 16th, and we hope we'll see you there at that live broadcast. I'm Leo Laporte. Another Twit
This Week in Tech
is in the can.
This Week. Chocolate.